This is Peggy Baker. I'm talking to Charles Sequeira at his home in Edmonton. The date is November the 7th, 2015. And we're just about to start talking about starting with his growing up years. So, Charles, do you want to talk about what growing up in India?
My name is Charles Sequeira. I was born in 10th of September 1925, and my schooling was in India at the high school. At the school level, it has been two or three different kinds of schools. My father was an administrator and a magistrate. Those days it was a combined function. There was no separation. So he used to be transferred from place to place. So some schools were Indian schools, some schools were Anglo-Indian schools, and some schools were European schools. It all depended upon there's a little distinction here, because European schools, it was always a British superintendent of schools who inspected, and the curriculum was a little different. While the Indian schools, they called them district educational officers, and usually it was an Indian who would be an educational officer. That said, after my school, I went to St. Aloysius College, Mangalore, and after that I went to Loyola College, Madras, to pursue my arts degree, and finally I took my master's, my MA, in economics and political science, political thought, I think. And throughout my education, it was in Jesuit institutions, and my father spent a lot of money sending me to all these colleges. And if the law college, I took my LLB degree, my law degree, in Pune University, a little south of Bombay. After that I came back and passed my bar council exam. And after articling for a year, I practiced law. For a while, I was a junior to Justice Krishnayer, who at that time was a leading criminal lawyer and a civil lawyer. And then he was an MLA as a minister for justice. Then he became a high court judge in Kerala. And after that, he was raised to the Supreme Court. So I had the good fortune to work in his office for a while as a junior lawyer. Later on, when I was practicing law, I was appointed a prosecutor and later a judicial magistrate. While practicing law, I had a twist in my destiny. I was always dreaming of going abroad, and I thought I will go. Canada never came to my mind. Most people went to Britain or Africa or some other place. So I wanted to go and to other places and then spend some time outside for a while, not as an immigrant, but work abroad and come back after a few years. And I went to my mother, and my mother wept because I had lost my father a year before. And he said, why I would want to go, leave the country when I had a good job? And my wife Rita said, we would stay here with our blessings rather than leave India with our tears. So we decided not to go. By that time, we had three children. At that time, we had no children. Then after a few years, we had three children. And the idea came back again to go abroad when things were getting a little bad as a prosecutor and later as a judicial magistrate. With three wars with Pakistan over Kashmir, all the money was going for defense and inflation. Things were getting hard for salaried people. Number two. Number three, there was a frontier dispute between China and India in the northeast, and we were at war with China for a few years. When the Communist Party was split into two, the Moscow group and the Peking group, and hundreds of people were arrested. There was a lot of turmoil, especially in Bengal and Kerala, two volatile states. Kerala was a highly literate state, and even when I left India in 66, anybody below 60 were all literates. It was 100% literacy and a politically volatile state. And during that time, including Bengal, in Bengal, one judge and a prosecutor were assassinated. And taking all together with a young family, I thought maybe I should go abroad. By the time my mother said, "Now on, you can do what you want. I'm getting old. You seek your own future." And so, after we got our blessings, we left India. Came to Delhi, had an interview, had a medical exam, and we took the plane from New Delhi after our immigration and arrived in Montreal the next day. That will be 29th to 30th early morning, 1966. And then we took a plane from there, Air Canada, and arrived at night at about 12 o'clock midnight in Edmonton. When we got down, it was 40 below. And so we took a taxi and went and stayed at King Edward's Hotel. Now it has been burnt. The building is lost due to fire. It was a nice hotel. We stayed there for the night, and next morning it was too late to catch a bus, Greyhound bus, and the children were a little airsick. So we thought we'll take a taxi, and we took a taxi and came to Athabasca. The house that was kept for us was delayed because immigration was delayed, with our papers delayed, because I had to get permission to leave the country and get clearance from the High Court as a magistrate and from the Home Department as a prosecutor. Secondly, I had to get permission, a clearance certificate from the Accountant General that I owe no loans for cars or whatever. And when I was cleared by that time, our immigration was all delayed. And we came, took a taxi and came over here. And Mr. Larson was the superintendent, and his good secretary, F.E. Nelson, was the secretary, and Mr. Hall was the chairman. And they all came to meet us at the Union Hotel and made arrangements for our stay there until we got a house for a week or so. And so we stayed there for a week, and Mr. McGregor, the principal of the school, came to take Rita the very next day to school, and she started her teaching duties on the 30th, on the next very next day, 31st I think, and she started teaching. Down below was the pub, and it was not easy for me to go to a pub in India, because I worked in small towns, district towns, and going to a pub was not acceptable. Owing because having help when I hold a judicial position, so this was a good idea for me to have an idea of what a pub would be. So I went, and came downstairs, I told Rita. Rita refused to come with me, so I went. I wore my suit, thinking not what to expect in a foreign country. So came over and then went to the pub. As soon as I came to the pub, the door was closed, and I saw there no knives, no guns, no knives allowed inside. And suddenly thought of some of the American films I saw in India about these Wild West towns. So I was reminded, what am I getting into here? So anyway, I was brave enough, I got in, and I sat there. And somebody came and served me a beer. Before I knew, more than four or five people came around and sat at my table, uninvited. So I thought, who are these people now? So anyway, but they were such nice people, they were very hospitable, and we talked for a while and we had our beer. And after a week or so, we got a house, a very cold house near the brick school. There was no heating arrangement, there was only some oil heater. You had to use oil in the living room, and with that oil, that heat had to spread throughout the house. And once you went to the bathroom, it was really, really cold, and you could shiver yourself dry before you could even take your towel to dry yourself. And later on, we moved to a better house when that house was available near the hospital. It was Charlie Fix's house. So we stayed there for a while, for almost a year or two. And then we thought, no more moving here and there. And we built our own house on the South Hill close to our high school. Now, in my case, I went to the Dean of the Faculty of Law, and he said he knew my university, my law degree. He knew the founder of our college, who was also a federal court judge in India, later on a Privy Council member in London, hearing appeals from all Commonwealth countries. So he knew the name Dr. Jayakar. But he said, I recognize your degree, but there is no vacancy. I could have given you a job of a comparative law, to teach comparative law. But unfortunately, I have no vacancy. Or you could do your master's based on my LLB to pursue my LLM. I was ill prepared for that, because just before I left India, the rupee was devalued, and the government of India allowed me, the Reserve Bank of India, allowed me only $40 subsistence allowance, they called it, to come to Canada. So with limited resources, I couldn't think of pursuing my graduate work. So he suggested that I approach the law society, because the university has nothing to do with practicing the law. So I wrote to them, and the law society placed very punitive conditions that I should go back for 3 years, article again, or for 1 year, and that was too long, for 4 years to do that. So Mr. Larson said, I had told him that I am prepared, if nothing fails, what are the chances in teaching? So he said, since you were interested in teaching also, why not you meet the dean, the Faculty of Education. So I went to Professor Pilkington, who was the associate dean from Scotland, very nice man, and he said, he shook hands with me and he said, you are welcome, but I may have to do for 1 year some educational courses since I was never in education. I thought it was fair enough. So I did my, we took a loan from the bank, and Rita, my wife, with three children, stayed in Athabasca. She was teaching, and she kept the fires burning until my 1 year was over, 7 or 8 months. After coming back, I too joined the staff, teaching staff, and we both taught senior high. She taught English and I taught social studies. And I also started the law course for the high school, grade 11 and 12. The winters were cold. Remember I told you, our first house was heated only with an oil heater. And one day when, for 2 weeks we had 60, 65 below in 1966, 67. And at midnight, some five or six people knocked at the door. And I opened the door, and here were some people, I think from the United Church, with blankets to say that it's a cold house, we have brought some blankets for you. I was really moved by the hospitality that they showed. And I should not fail to say that when we came here, except for the correspondence with Mr. Larson and the secretary F.E. Nelson, we didn't know anybody personally. And United Church was the only church that gave us that moral support in the person of Reverend Clifford Parks. He was the minister of the United Church at that time. He had come from Britain 3 years before we came, and he used to constantly come and visit us. And he was a source of a lot of moral support because we didn't know anybody at that time. I have to say that I am always grateful to Mr. Parks and the United Church. After finishing my studies at the university, I joined the staff, and both of us taught until at the age of 60, my health was failing with heart problems and blood pressure and all that, and I had to resign from teaching. But still I could not keep quiet in the house. Some suggested that I run for the school board, and I got it was a by-election, it was unanimous. The second time when I ran, the next term, I got 87% of the votes. So I was happy. I got a good majority to start a different kind of a life as a school board member. Later on, I was vice chairman and chairman of the board for a few years until my health failed and we were forced to come to Edmonton because for want of specialists. So we moved to Edmonton some 8 or 9 years ago, 7 or 8 years back, I think. Not very good at dates. So that is our history. When I was in Athabasca, I was trying to make a study of, I tried to do my master's. And then later on I got a fellowship from Ottawa to pursue my PhD degree. And I was working on the Metropolitan Satellite Model of Development and to what extent it can be related to Canada. And I was trying to make a study of the distinction between some of the problems that India had when I lived there and what kind of problems we could have in Canada. And what I noticed was what divided India was the religion and the caste system. Caste was supposed to be pure division of labor, which finally became a sore point in Indian society, because from achieved status it went to ascriptive status where you were born into it. And so we had a lot of untouchables who were disenfranchised, who were not in the main Hindu society, and the others were in a hierarchical ladder, Brahmin, Kshatriya, etc., etc. So when I came here, I found it was not so much caste, but being an immigrant country where the population is mainly coming from immigration, I was perceiving, will there be a problem if the economy goes down? Because economics seems to be the central focus for any problems in society. And they usually, when the economy is down, always it is the immigrant who is to be blamed for the unemployment, because they say local jobs are being robbed by. This is happening in the States with Mexicans and whatnot. So I thought we may run into a problem if the economy doesn't run well. It was already showing some shaky signs in the economy. I got deeply interested in the only solution was to build a multicultural society. And I was happy when I was asked by the province to be a member of the multicultural, I don't know what it called, multicultural something, the committee. It was a premier's committee in Alberta, and I was appointed one of the members. And from there, I pursued my ambition to make further study. And when the Alberta Multicultural Commission was appointed and they came to the Athabasca University for a hearing, I gave a presentation about the problems that we may face as an immigrant province, immigrant country as a whole, and Alberta in particular. I also took part in the early stages as the secretary of the Lions Club, and later on in the Rotary Club, and a few other community activities, and also for the disabled, and used to attend the meetings at the Alberta Association for Community Living, where they, as a board director and as the vice president. All in all, it was a very fruitful life that my wife and I and our children spent in Athabasca. We found it was a great community to live, a very hospitable community, and I'm grateful. And my children themselves told me, "Dad, I'm happy you didn't go to Ottawa or anywhere for any federal jobs. I'm glad you stayed in Athabasca," because he saw the difference between schools in Athabasca and schools in the city when he went to university, when they went to university. And so even my children are grateful that we raised our family in the town of Athabasca, a very hospitable and friendly community. We saw a diverse community of Anglo-Saxons, French, Polish, Ukrainian, what have you, plus we from India. So it was great to live in those days when we were in Athabasca, and we still look back many times the good days we had, and we still miss Athabasca after spending the best years of our lives from 42 to whatever in the 80s, almost past 80, 83 years old.
I was wondering if you would like to compare the things you did when you were a kid with the things that your kids did in Canada.
Oh. As a kid, I was essentially interested in debating at the high school level. I took an active part, and many times I won some debates in inter-school and inter-district debates. But once I came at the college level, my interest was, by the time the independence movement had gained momentum, 43, 44, 45, and Gandhi called, when Home Rule was denied, Gandhi called for all-out independence. And we as young students joined the Gandhi and Nehru, the Congress movement for the independence of India, and I was quite active in the political movement at that time. That most of my years were spent, and then I was the first second year university student to be the president of the student union at the college level. Usually it was the monopoly of a BA student final year or a BSc or a BCom. For the first time I was the president at the second year university level. So all in all, it was a very fruitful time, very engaging time, dangerous times too, because there was all-out police action many times, and we had to face a lot of reserve police coming in and then threatening us to arrest us and all that. Fortunately for me, the principal of our college told the police that as long as they are agitating within our premises, they shouldn't be doing anything to us. So that was a pretty active life as a student. And my children, they were also engaged in debating in Athabasca. All my three students were presidents of the student union at the Edwin Parr Composite High School. And especially my son Prem and Arun also, they took part in a lot of inter-school, debates, and went to at international level also, they were debating. Yeah, and Prem especially, and once in a while Arun, took part in the CFRN debates that they conducted in Edmonton. And my wife used to drive the students there, my two children and some of the debating students from Edwin Parr. And she also hosted two provincial tournaments in Athabasca and put the Athabasca town in the map. Everybody knew Edwin Parr Composite debating students. So, but she can talk about it if she wants when her turn comes for an interview. I don't want to dilate on it.
Just for recreation, I was wondering, when you went out to play, what did you do?
Recreation, that was a problem, a real, real problem. When as a student, we had ground hockey, not ice hockey. I was the vice captain of the high school team, and I played tennis and cricket. When we reached, after my university and when I joined the bar, I kept going with my tennis. We had our own tennis court at the bar, and we lawyers and judicial officers, we had our own club and we played tennis. But when we came here in Athabasca, unfortunately, it was mostly curling, skating, and I was nervous. I didn't want to break my back when I was in my 40s. So, unfortunately, I did not take part in any of these sports activities or athletic activities, because I had no idea of skating and skip, and I was too nervous to do that. So, unfortunately, that was a deficiency, regrettably, of course. But my children are avid skaters and avid. They used to go to the mountains to skate and all that. They were young and youthful, so they had enough energy to do all that.
I was also wondering about your memories of when your years as board chairman of the education system, and what do you remember as being your proud achievements and failures.
One was that there was a lot of resentment with regarding the teaching of French. French media. And before my election as a board member, one of my items on my manifesto was that if I am on the board, I will see that there is French immersion introduced in our school systems. And I tried to appeal to the parents that learning more than one language only raises the IQ of students. It doesn't diminish them. So the more languages you know, the better it is for your children. And I impressed upon them the benefits of having French as also to be taught in our schools. In fact, I told some people that when my kids came here, they could read and write in 3 or 4 languages. English, Hindi as the national language, my own mother tongue, Konkani, which is derived from Marathi or Hindi, and the local language, Malayalam and Canarese. They could read and write the they could read all the newspapers I brought at home from the different languages, and they could read it, except, of course, my daughter. She was only 3 and a half or 4 years old. So that is, I feel that to me, that was a great thing, a great benefit done to our student population in Athabasca. I don't know about now, it's more than 8 or 9 years since I left. Probably they'll continue with that. Probably it's being continued also. So that is number one. What other things can I think of? I don't know. Everything came.
Were there any particular challenges for those years?
Particular challenges? No particular challenges. Things went quite smoothly. Nobody challenged any of my decisions. Nobody challenged any of my suggestions. Because as a chairman, my stand was to convince people if there is going to be some policy change or something. So I don't think there were any conflicts. I tried to resolve the conflicts even before it started, when I perceived a conflict would arise. And the best thing to do it was to convince them, and saying that we are all working here for the common good. I may represent Athabasca, but I represent the whole county. You also do the same. You represent your own jurisdiction. But on the whole, it is for the common good of all students in the county. With that kind of an approach, I thought we could resolve a lot of conflicts, unnecessary competition, unhealthy competition. And so I didn't have any problems. So thank God for that. And we had 2 or 3 different superintendents during my time. I was on, of course, as chairman, I was on the selection committee also. So everything went smoothly.
So you talked quite a bit about how much you liked Athabasca and what you appreciated about Canada. Things about India that you wish that you could transfer to Canada?
I don't know. I think Canada and Athabasca, Canada, I think, is a great country. It's a very tolerant country. Of course, you will always have a minority group of rednecks. That you will get anywhere, including India. But on the whole, I think, considering many other countries in Europe and in the United States, we don't. Of course, there's always been a annoying problem with the native people, the heritage we got from the old colonial society, unfortunately. But I think even that is going to be resolved very nicely. especially now with Notley and in Alberta, and at the federal level, Mr. Trudeau, again, quite a liberal person without any extreme right-wing conservative ideas. So I think there's a lot of hope in Canada as to be an emblem and to be a star or a leading star for other nations to imitate what Canadian culture has to do in a truly multicultural. We have got a long way to go, unfortunately or fortunately, but I'm sure we can overcome all that. When there are different diverse populations coming, you can expect conflicts. But I think we know how to resolve them also in a very nice way. And I think they are doing it very well, especially now with Trudeau at the federal level and Mrs. Notley at the Alberta level. We are having a great team politically. I think we have a great team. So the very fact that the Liberals and the NDPs don't have a common agenda yet are able to work amicably itself is a sign to show that we are heading very well in the future in the right direction.
Sounds like you were always interested and involved in politics from your student days.
Yeah.
How did you get involved in Athabasca?
How do what?
How did you get involved in Athabasca? How did you get initiated into?
Well, I found the student population was a little tame from what I saw. The Indian student population is very volatile, very active, very, very active. But when I came here, I think there was a lot of complacency. Then they have good reasons for that. It has been a very peaceful country with very little conflicts. While in India, it was always conflict. Either it is Hindu-Muslim, or it is caste system creating conflicts. And so we always had, and at the same time, there were progressive, very progressive movements of student population to say that this is all outdated medieval societies. We do not want that anymore. We have to build a modern society. But you will always have rednecks everywhere. And in India also we have them. But it takes time. It takes time. When India also is a very diverse society. We have some 200 dialects and languages and 14 to 16 official languages. So you can imagine the diversity. Here we have two languages, French and English, we have a conflict. Then imagine how much it is for 14 or 16 official languages. But things are coming.
So how did you get it initiated into politics in Athabasca, in Alberta?
In Athabasca, Alberta. I was always a social democrat. Even in India, I appealed to it. I liked Karl Marx, but I didn't like a one-party state. So I never joined the Communist Party. And the closest to me after that was the social democracies. And the Indian National Congress at that time, under Nehru and Gandhi, I would say they were social democrats. They believed in the people, they believed in the welfare of the people. They did not want to serve only the elite class. And I found that that good Baptist minister, Tommy Douglas in Saskatchewan, when I was reading his manifesto and everything else, I was attracted towards that. And so, even after coming here, I always had social democratic values and social democratic beliefs. It has its own weaknesses, but we can't do things in a hurry. People have to slowly get used to it. And when I read Perestroika by Gorbachev, I was more than convinced for what I thought it would be. with a one-party state. All power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Lord Acton's old adage, that stays even now. And number two, what Johnson said once, politics is the last resort of the scoundrel. And so I truly believe at least social democracy will achieve its goal for a better society in Canada or in India.
So you found people who enjoyed debating with you about politics?
We had very heated debates, like Mr. Mike Butler.
Uh-huh.
Mike Butler, he came from Britain. He had a few colonial ideas. He was a child of the empire, and I was a child of Gandhi and Nehru. So there were always conflicts. At the same time, he was one of my best friends. Ever since day one, we came to Athabasca, till the end of his death, we remained friends. And when I was asked to speak for give his funeral oration,
eulogy.
After the eulogy, his daughter Susan and his son David came to me and said, "How come, with all those heated discussions you had in the house, you still became such good friends?" They were surprised that we remained friends till the very end. So that is the way. When we debate, we should not be personal. We should be fighting on ideas and ideology rather than personal attacks. Unfortunately, that is what is happening in politics, as we saw during the last federal election. Extremely sad. Like, even conservatives, I have no quarrel with them. If they were the type of, say, who was that before Mulroney, from Alberta, Joe Clark or Stanfield, they were decent conservatives, but not the type of people we have later on, that extreme right wing. I don't think Canada deserves that kind of a government. Have I answered you?
Yes. Yes, you answered me. I still got involved with people who thought the same as you, and you found that in the New Democratic Party.
Democratic Party. I found a lot of things common to what I believed in. A fair society, decent wages for people. You know, you can't make money by giving them low wages and make money on the backs of the people. You know, you have a fair wage and you have your fair profit.
Was Leo Paquette's campaign the first one that you were
involved
in?
When Leo Paquette ran, I was the president of the constituency of the NDP party. And we worked very hard to get him elected. And we got him elected. Yeah. So I hope things will be... I always think the future will always be better. And put the dark side of life behind us. We had our colonial history. In India also, the same thing. The problems we have. The wars we fought over Kashmir on religious grounds. Waste in people's character, people's integrity, and people's faith in other people because of diversity. So I think unity is much better than all this disunity. I hope someday we will have a fair and decent society where we can live. It's a good beginning. I think Trudeau has started with, look at the representation in the federal government.
Just
have you ever heard of so many people from Aboriginal people as ministers, different ethnic groups as ministers? So it's not the monopoly of any particular who came first and who came second. It is that we are all citizens of Canada and treat them all alike. That's the only way to build a healthy, unified society. free from all the conflicts.
So we've been talking for about an hour now. Well, you've been
talking. I didn't realize.
Yeah, so why don't we stop for now
and
think about it. And I'm sure you're going to think of more things that you should mention.
Yeah.
And so we'll pick it up and carry on. Next time we can get together.
We'll do that. So
thank you, Charles.
Thank you, Peggy, for the opportunity. I didn't expect this.
No?
I didn't expect until you phoned me and said, I'm coming to Edmonton to interview you. Well, I shall continue from where I left yesterday. You asked me one or two questions which was not completed by the time we had to end our interview last night. One was with regard to my coming to Athabasca and some of the experiences. Well, we had no difficulty with the language, but I did have some difficulty to learn the local expressions, sometimes which left because of my ignorance. I committed a few mistakes or a few embarrassments. One such, to give one or two examples, one was when some friends came to visit me, my neighbors, and then they said, so-and-so was stoned yesterday. So I literally thought stoned meant, I thought he was literally stoned. I didn't realize that he was over tipsy. And so I was wondering, how on earth can a modern state still apply the Old Testament laws and regulations meant for a primitive society, stoning people for any kind of delinquency? That was one example where, number one. Number two, you also asked me, Kitty Corner. I was a friend at that, the first year when we came, we had no car or anything like that. For the simple reason, the Reserve Bank of India allowed me only $40 subsistence allowance, they called it, because the rupee was devalued and they clamped down on all currency going out of the country, jewelry going out of the country, property had to be declared, immovable property had to be declared, all kinds of restrictions came in 2 months before we left, and that was hard on us. So we could not afford a car. We used to go by Greyhound bus to Edmonton and all that. Once a friend of ours gave us a ride to Edmonton, and then he had to go to Edmonton, I think, and then he said, meet me after 1 or 2 hours at the Kitty Corner, and he dropped me somewhere in Edmonton, and I was going, it was 20, 25 below, and I was going round and round the blocks to find out where the Kitty Corner was. I didn't realize that. I thought Kitty Corner was a store or something like that, meant for selling toys for kids. And then finally, I found that it was nothing but going diagonally across the road. So a few things like that. But very soon we learned the expressions that were used in Canada. You asked me about the children. Yes, children also, as I said last night, they were very grateful that they grew up in Athabasca. They did very well in school. And after school, when they went to university, I think they are now in their various professions. One is an orthopedic surgeon. The other is a chartered accountant running his own company. And he has his own firm, and he has some 3 or 4 others, associates, juniors, working for in the firm with 3 branches, actually, one in Edmonton, one in Calgary, and one in Vancouver. So he's doing quite well there. and my last daughter, who took a degree in music and used to give private tuition at home, and earning quite well, but later decided that the children should be done homeschooling. So she is now at home and doesn't do any tuitions for others. She just tutors the two kids who are age 10 and age 12 and homeschooling them. So, and they are a happy family, very close to where we live. So things are going on quite well as far as the family is concerned. So on the whole, we have been very fortunate to have a successful life in Canada. Now I am 90 years old and I'm ready, having done all my duties as a parent, as a father, and whatever. At any time, I am prepared to face the inevitable with regard to... I told you yesterday how important it was. I found multiculturalism in Canada. Having seen the turmoils and seen the conflicts and the wars and the murders and all the things that the bloodshed during the partitioning days between Hindus and Muslims, and later, and then also caste playing a key role in politics to divide and rule. So all these things here, I thought, we don't have caste, but I identified after a few years that the danger in a peaceful society like Canada would be when things go wrong in the economy. We are essentially an immigrant country, and without immigration, we would be having a zero population increase, and we have to depend on immigration. But unfortunately, when things go bad and the unemployment increases, the first target would be the immigrant, and usually the latest arrival. So everybody had their share of their woes of discrimination, like the Ukrainians, later on the Asians, and now also the Africans. And I thought the only way to minimize the evils of race, nationality, and will be through multiculturalism, beginning with schools and the family, where children are reared to not only to tolerate others but also to respect them. As they say, you can tolerate a pimple, but you don't respect a pimple on your face. It's the same thing with multiculturalism. Unless toleration is a very condescending term. It's not toleration that we need. What we need is respect for each other. And multiculturalism is the key. And fortunately, I was on the provincial committee of the multicultural, appointed by the government of Alberta at that time. And sometime in 1988, we heard that the multicultural government appointed a commission to listen to the voice of citizens all over the province. And so the commission arrived in Athabasca and held its hearing on November the 4th, 1988. So I, as a citizen of Canada and a resident of Athabasca for quite a number of years by then, also attended the hearing and gave my presentation with regard to multiculturalism. So if you don't mind, I will read out a few things that I said at the hearing. Presentation to the Alberta Multicultural Commission at its hearing held on November the 4th, 1988 at the Governing Council Chambers, Athabasca University in Athabasca. Honorable Chairman and members of the Multicultural Commission, it is gratifying to note that the Government of Alberta has taken the initiative to appoint this commission to elicit public opinion in this province on the important issue of multiculturalism. The submissions made in this presentation center around question 7 on page 6 of the booklet, Planning Alberta's Multicultural Future, which asks, what kind of multicultural future do you see in the year 2000? The overall content of the presentation is based on the observations and impressions gathered and the experiences gained during the last 22 years when, along with my family of a wife and three small children, I immigrated to Alberta, Athabasca from India. The period of transition was not easy. That was to be expected. There was nothing surprising about it. In fact, the surprising part was how quickly the years passed by. The years of transition passed by and how few years it took for the period of settlement to end in a totally foreign environment. This would not have been the case if it were not for the warm and hospitable community which welcomed a family from a faraway land. It was an era when the province was flowing with milk and honey, and there was place for everybody in Canada. The situation in the province and in the nation has changed and is changing. If the present economic trend continues and the present population movement gathers momentum at a global level, Albertans have to be prepared for the inevitable change. Change within Alberta and Canada and the effects of change in a fast-shrinking world, in an age where traditional, national, racial, religious, linguistic, and other protective barriers are becoming more and more obsolete. Since 1972, the Government of Alberta has allotted considerable sums of money to prepare Albertans for the future. The intentions are all well meant. However, the results achieved so far are not very encouraging. If the pattern continues, the year 2000 could be more disappointing. At the beginning of this century, multiculturalism was not even relevant as a topic for academic discussion or debate, even for young high school students in Alberta, because Alberta was fairly a homogeneous population, with the native people excluded on the reservations. Alberta was no different from other settled colonies of European empires. Nor was the fate of the Aboriginal people any different. With the internalization of capital and the consequent mobility and internationalization of labor, now with rapid technological changes, beginning with the late 50s, for the first time we saw new faces, heard new languages, and faced new cultures in an increasing number. The new enlightened national policies were and are made at the top level to counter the zero-growth Canadian population. The breakup of empires, the rise of independent nations with independent economies, necessitated Canadian governments to review national policies in the light of the realities of our dependent world, an interdependent world, with the transfer of goods and services and movements of national and human resources from one part of the world to another. However, the common man experiencing the vicissitudes of the unstable and receding economy, unless equally enlightened, will not see the newcomers, especially the visible ones, in the same perspective. racist pronouncements and activities a few decades ago were considered to be un-Canadian and uncivilized. Using religious sentiments for political and economic gain was assumed to be characteristic of a backward, traditional and or primitive tribal societies of the Third World or of the medieval European society of a bygone era, which could never take root in a highly technological society like ours. So it was presumed. Recent events negate this belief. Race, language and religion are increasingly being used for political mobilization, which will in turn, though it may bring advantages for the few, can bring sorrow, misery and hardship to many innocent victims, to their body, soul and mind. These signs of social pathology are the harbingers of events to come unless strong leadership and enlightened statesmanship are forthcoming. The quantitative increase in laws and regulations to curb antisocial elements are not effective without the qualitative change in personal convictions and commitments developed in the home and in the school. As an educator, I ask the question, have our schools inculcated the Canadian core culture in our young? Who will man our educational government, industrial institutes, who will man our educational government, industrial institutions and our legislatures? Are our young being prepared for year 2080? Recent events in Alberta and in some parts of Canada prove that schools and universities have largely become training grounds just for saleable skills for the labour market, to the neglect of educating, and I quote educating, the young to be fruitful, intellectually healthy adults of the future. They are ill-prepared for the tremendous changes in the year 2080 and beyond. I do not want to be a prophet of doom and gloom. Albertans as a whole are an enlightened, tolerant and peaceful people, many of them old and new, or their parents or grandparents have experienced intolerance of various sorts in their own countries of origin. The older generation of Albertans who came from Europe have narrated the stories of how aristocracies of old treated them or their parents. It was no different from Asian aristocracies, except probably that the latter type was more ancient and more ruthless. But public memory is short. Leadership and statesmanship calls for a strong political will on the part of decision and policy makers if we have to achieve the objectives of multiculturalism. To this end, the following recommendations are made. 1. A total, not partial, commitment to multiculturalism. Traditional arts like drama, music, symphony are all important and should be encouraged. But the all-important multicultural reality cannot be treated as a peripheral phenomenon. 2. Equal access to multicultural funding. At present, disparity exists between funding for traditional arts and funding for multicultural programs and activities. 3. Multicultural activities to be non-partisan. 4. An independent, permanent multicultural commission to be created to pursue the objectives of multiculturalism on the same lines as the Economic Council of Canada. 5. The above body to be also an advisory body to the government. 6. Adequate funding to be provided for such a commission for research activities to help the commission to offer proposals to government based on the fundings of such research. 7. Adequate powers to be invested on an independent commission for the proper implementation and delivery of goals of multiculturalism throughout the length and breadth of Alberta and across all departments of government. 8. appropriate legislation to be introduced to make number 5 to 8 possible. 9. Individual ethnic groups to be funded as is presently done, with greater emphasis on all embracing multi-organization in the province to avoid ghettoization. 10. Such all embracing multicultural organization to be defined as those whose membership include all ethnic and racial groups in a community with the main objective of developing and propagating a core Canadian culture, again, to avoid ghettoization. Number 11, the core Canadian culture to be defined as a culture of tolerance, acceptance, and mutual respect for each other's race, nationality, religion, language, customs, and traditions. Further, to have a strong belief in equality of opportunity and accessibility in the true spirit of pluralism, reflecting the ideal of unity in diversity. Albertans and Canadians as a whole and the reality of global interdependence. 12. To refuse funding to organizations whose objectives and or activities are counter to the objectives of multiculturalism. 13. To refuse funding to organizations whose objectives on paper are multicultural but its activities are far from Canadian core culture mentioned in number 11. 14. The government of Alberta to develop a multicultural educational policy to provide leadership and direction to integrate multicultural education in the Alberta educational system. 15. The government of Alberta to introduce a multicultural curriculum as an important and compulsory component from grade 1 to grade 12. 16. Such a policy and curriculum to be developed in consultation with school trustees, teachers, and the heritage councils and other interested groups. 17. The government of Alberta to the Department of Culture and Multiculturalism and the Department of Education provide adequate funding and other resources to make multicultural education meaningful to our youth in Alberta. 18. Adequate exposure to be given to this important concept to our educators, teachers, administrators, boards of education, and those in the public and private sector. If we want to continue to build a tolerant, enlightened, and understanding society, we have to strive for multiculturalism, not ghettoization. We have to develop a common core culture which is distinctly Canadian in the Canadian environment. If the rich diversity of peoples and cultures which make up Alberta is not to be tarnished by racial, religious, linguistic, and other bigotries, the key ideals of our core culture should play a major role to build a healthy province and a healthy nation. In the race for the pursuit of material prosperity, we sometimes fail to see the importance of human resources. If you want to get the best out of a citizen for himself and for his country, he should first of all feel secure and free. A healthy society cannot be built with insecure citizens, fearful of dominant groups, whether they are walking on the streets or in a government office or before an employer for a job interview, with the fear that he is different and may be treated differently. Respect for one's own culture and that of other Albertans in a multicultural milieu is the only answer to achieve our objectives 12 years from now. May your efforts be rewarding. Thank you. Respectfully submitted, Charles Sequeira. I'm sorry, there is a PS here in my hearing. I am unable to officially present a brief as the chairman of the Lakeland Regional Council or as the vice chairman of the Board of Education, County of Athabasca. Time and distance was against me to hold a joint discussion, but I have no hesitation to state that my colleagues in both these organizations will endorse the views I have expressed here tonight based on the premise that we are all working towards a common good. Charles Sequeira.
Thank you, Charles.